Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Lucy Hickmott.
Hi there, hope you're doing okay and thanks for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, May 20th. Coming up, hear from roads bosses ahead of what's expected to be a busy weekend in the county and how young people will benefit from a new £8 million creative learning centre. But first, it's emerged East Kent Hospitals Trust is offering employees one-off payments to leave their jobs as part of plans to reduce their workforce. A local Democracy reporter, Dan Essen, is here with more details. So Dan, how did the announcement come about?
We've seen this email that was sent out to staff at East Kent Hospitals Trust, which basically inviting them to take part in what's being called a mutually agreed resignation scheme, or MARS. They stress that this is not the same thing as redundancy, voluntary or otherwise, but more or less it's asking employees of East Kent Hospitals Trust to apply to this scheme by about the 11th of June, to essentially start a process with management where they assess whether or not their job could be just deleted from the workforce, not them being, you know, replaced with someone being paid less or something like that. It's to for the outright deletion of roles from the workforce. And obviously this is pretty much a tacit acceptance that they think there's a lot of, they must think there's people in their workforce who they could probably do without. And they need to save money. They're asking people to come forward if they reckon their jobs could feasibly be abolished.
And what sort of reaction has there been from the community?
I've spoken to a couple of campaigners, people from an organisation called Concern for Healthcare in East Kent. This was founded quite a long time ago now when there was a risk of Kent and Canterbury Hospital being shut or downsized in the early 2000s. But campaigners are quite critical of it. The current chairman, Ken Rogers, has told me that that essentially this is a government initiative, that it's not the trust's fault, but that attempts to reduce the number of staff will inevitably risk getting rid of staff that are important for the delivery of services and that sort of thing. You know, the trust insists that that's not going to happen, but he's concerned that they may end up losing people that they really shouldn't lose. And David Short, one of the founders of Concern for Healthcare in East Kent, he told me similar things. But he said the problems with the NHS is money and finance require significantly more radical restructuring than simply asking people to come forward and have their jobs abolished if they think they might be useless to the trust. He thinks that there's all kinds of things about the way procurement is done, the way management is done. He says basically there's a bloat of middle managers at the detriment of clinical provision, but that a scheme like this isn't really necessarily going to help.
Well, what have bosses said in response?
So obviously I've spoken to the trust about this and they came back to me saying that this is very unfortunate, but it's a financial imperative. They have to save on staffing costs, which currently about 60% of their budget, something like £750 million they spend on staffing every year. And they simply, you know, they've been told to save money and they have to save the money. What they didn't say, but I think is implicit, is that the fact that they're running it through a scheme like this rather than a voluntary or otherwise redundancy scheme makes me think that clearly management don't actually have a firm idea of where they need to get rid of staff. They just know they need to get rid of them, which potentially isn't a very good sign. But obviously they have stressed very strongly that people who are essential for delivery of services, whose absence, you know, may be detrimental to the provision of clinical services, won't be deleted. And you know, the trust has to agree with these staff to let them go. It's not just that any member of staff can come forward and say, please abolish my job and give me a few months' salary to clear off. That's not how it's going to work.
And I understand this isn't the only Kent Trust that's taken these measures.
No, this isn't the only Kent Trust which has taken this measure. So we, colleagues at Kent Online, reported way back in December that the NHS Trusts in Dartford and Gravesham and also in Medway Maritime had undertaken a similar scheme. I spoke to those trusts for this piece and that they confirmed to me that is ongoing. And what I've been told by campaigners is that the reason for this is essentially a national government initiative. NHS England has told trusts they need to save money, and this is one of the means available to them. So no, several other trusts in Kent are doing this. Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells Trust didn't confirm to me whether they are or not, but it's been suggested to me that they are.
Thanks, Dan.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today. A 24-year-old man from Ramsgate has pleaded not guilty to the murder of a baby in July 2022. Tyler Warmby from Prestige Avenue appeared at Canterbury Crown Court, accused of killing 12-week-old Hunter Hodges. The trial, which is expected to last around 6 weeks, is set to take place in October. A murder hearing has been told that a man in his 90s who was found dead at his home in St Mary's Bay last week had been struck numerous times with a hammer. Details of Thomas Lambert's death were revealed as his son Mark Lambert appeared at Maidstone Crown Court, accused of the killing last Thursday. Lambert, who's from Cheriton Road in Folkestone, will go on trial on January 4th, and that's expected to last up to 3 weeks. A man's been charged by police investigating a stabbing in Maidstone town centre. The attack happened following an argument between two men on the Broadway Bridge earlier this month. A 24-year-old is accused of causing GBH with intent. He's due at Crown Court in June. Two men have been arrested after police found drugs and counterfeit goods following a crash in Strood. Bags were discovered containing 2 kilos of cannabis and fake designer clothing following a collision involving a van in Watling Street on Monday. A 29 and 36-year-old were detained.
Kent Online reports.
We're being warned to expect a busy weekend on the roads as Operation Brock has now come into force on the M20. The bank holiday and half-term getaway will see thousands of people heading through Dover and Folkestone. The contraflow barrier will allow lorries to queue on the motorway between Maidstone and Ashford. Toby Howe is from the Kent and Medway Resilience Forum.
This weekend we're really expecting it to be busy at both Dover and Eurotunnel. It's the first weekend that we will see 100% checks or registrations carried out for the new entry-exit system into the EU. So what this means is it adds a bit of extra time to each car, each passenger going through to cross the channel. Added to which, it is going to be very busy with tourists anyway. So if you put those two together, what we're expecting is to see queuing traffic outside Port of Dover, in the town of Dover on the A20 and the A2, and also approaching Eurotunnel. It's likely to see, or likely to be seen, what we saw at Easter on Good Friday, where we had traffic backing out of Eurotunnel onto the M20. So we have traffic management plans in place. We have additional resource from both National Highways and Kent Police to be available to deal with any congestion that we're expecting to see. But I do reiterate, we are expecting a very busy weekend, Friday and Saturday. It is really frustrating for all in Kent that we still have to rely on Operation Brock. The trouble is, it is all that the Kent and Medway Resilience Forum do have available to control that freight flow down to Eurotunnel and the Port of Dover. If we did not have Brock, as I've mentioned earlier, we're going to have really busy tourist traffic. If we didn't have Brock, we would then have hundreds of HGVs also joining those queues down to Dover, which ends up causing blockage at Folkestone and Hawkinge. And if they're also then queuing to get into Eurotunnel, we could see real mixed traffic queuing blocking the M20 approaching Eurotunnel. So Brock is essential at the moment. I realise, yes, it is frustrated for people that have to use it and aren't impacted down in East Kent, but it is essential. It is all that we have available until the government find an alternative.
Police have made 2 arrests in connection with a goose that went missing from a community pond near Borough Green. Gandalf, who lived at Basted Mill Pond, was allegedly snatched at around 7 p.m. last Tuesday. A local man and woman, both in their 20s, were arrested on suspicion of animal cruelty and have since been released on bail. Residents who've been forced to leave a block of flats in Maidstone following a water leak are unlikely to be able to return before the end of the month. Miller Heights was evacuated last week, and the managing company's now told people to make sure they have alternative accommodation until next Friday. They've been given an extra day to collect any belongings, with no timeline yet for when the building will reopen. A cafe in Dartford has been given a 1-star hygiene rating after inspectors found a decomposing mouse and out-of-date food. Rodent droppings were also discovered during a visit to Coffee Goat in Station Approach last month. The owner says steps have already been taken to address the issues raised. Now, the MP for Folkestone and Hythe has spoken out about the number of criminals who end up re-offending after being released from prison. Tony Vaughan raised the issue in the Commons yesterday.
Reach Out and Recover Kent are a brilliant organisation I met in Folkestone over the weekend who help people, including ex-offenders, recover and stay away from addiction so they can gain skills and work to reintegrate into society. But Ministry of Justice figures show that at the six-month post-release point, the reoffending rate for adults is twice as high if they are unemployed compared to those in employment. So, Mr. Speaker, what is the government doing to ensure that more ex-offenders in my constituency get tailored and timely support, particularly around the issue of addiction, to get them back into work and to leave offending behind them once and for all?
This was the response from Jake Richards, who's the Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Justice.
My honourable friend is right to raise these issues and the good work that's happening in his constituency. As he knows, Lord Timpson is leading work about what happens when inmates are in custody. That means working with health services to ensure that our prisoners are getting the support they need, and also with the private sector employers to ensure that there are opportunities afterwards. And I will ask Lord Timpson to write to him with specifics about what is happening in his area.
Kent Online News.
Residents in a village near Gravesend have criticised plans for another housing development in the area. An application's been submitted for 100 homes on farmland near the Drove Way in Eisted Rise. It follows a separate proposal to build 154 new properties at Rose Farm off Downs Way, with concerns about an increase in traffic and the loss of countryside. Work started to knock down the multi-storey car park at a shopping centre in Ashford. It's been cleared along with the neighbouring Parkmore building to make way for a new development. A mural created by local artist Mr. Doodle will have to be removed as part of the demolition. Now, police have spoken out against plans for a new late-night bar in Maidstone. An application has been submitted for Tasty Africa to play music and sell alcohol at a site on Pudding Lane. Officers have raised concerns it could add to the level of crime in the area. We're told thousands of children across Kent will benefit from a new £8 million creative learning centre described as a game changer for young people. Bosses at the Marlow Theatre want to restore the 12th century Poor Priest's Hospital in the city centre. The new part of the space will become the Hive, with an area for performances and activities. The project's been awarded £4.4 million worth of National Lottery Heritage funding. Earlier, I caught up with the Marlow Chief Exec Deborah Shaw, who told us about the history of the building.
Well, it was originally built on the site of a tannery, which belonged to a landowning family in Canterbury, who then built the Poor Priest Hospital, which is what gives it its name now. And that's hospital in the sense of hospitality. So it was a place where destitute priests used to live originally. And then in medieval times, it became a place of pilgrimage. So it's a place where people used to stay. In fact, in the early years, Franciscan monks came over while St. Francis of Assisi was still alive. And they came over and they stayed in the Poor Priest Hospital. And they looked across the river and decided that would be a great place to put the first ever Franciscan chapel. So it's got, you know, it's got an incredibly rich history. It's got layers of history inside. It's had a mint in it. It's been a jail. It's been a workhouse. It's been a blue coat school. And then more recently, it was the Heritage Museum. But it didn't have that many visitors, and the city decided that they'd close the Heritage Museum, move the objects to the Beanie and other centres, and then they were looking for someone to take it over. So we did.
So tell me about the Hive itself and what this will provide in terms of creative opportunities for young people.
So the Hive is the new creative learning centre. It's on the side of the river. It's centred around a beautiful big state-of-the-art, specially designed rehearsal studio. And that space is big enough to take a whole school group, to take our youth company sessions for the Signet School, which is we're the national home of Matthew Bourne New Adventures program for young people. to train them as dancers, and they can, there's enough space for them to all leap around in the studio. And then around it, it's got ancillary spaces, it's got breakout rooms, classrooms, office space for our team, locker space, all that kind of thing, and a beautiful courtyard for people to hang around in. And it is sort of connected across to the rest of the heritage space as well. There's just a kind of safeguarding kind of line through the building, just while we're using it, you know, specifically for young people. But it's a really beautiful space. And they all got together and decided they wanted to call it The Hive. And they think that that really reflects the spirit of it being a place of well-being, of community, of working together, and a sort of hive brain as well. So it should be a real centre of creativity. We're also able to create events and projects with young people and with the community. So we'll be doing things like History Lates, we'll be doing projects with schools around heritage stories from the building. We'll be having, on the medieval side, there'll be commissioned artworks that tell the stories of the space and the people who were in it. So The Hive, as the Creative Learning Centre, which is half of the building, is very much kind of embedded in that the heritage feel and the beauty of the interiors of that building. And what I'm really excited about, as well as the Creative Learning Centre, The Hive, is that the heritage part will be an extra element of the heritage offer of Canterbury to tourists and to visitors and to local communities. And it will be free to access as well. So, you know, and it'll have a cafe overlooking the river. So it's a real place to come and linger. And we're very excited about it.
They're hoping to reopen the site in 2029.
Kent Online reports.
A search is underway for a new operator to run Margate's Theatre Royal. £6 million has been spent restoring the listed building after it closed in 2022. There are plans for it to reopen next year. It comes as long-awaited designs have been revealed for work to refurbish and extend the Margate Winter Gardens. The venue closed in 2022 because of a backlog of repairs, as well as the new concert hall. There'll also be a drama school, nursery and rooftop bar. And over in Whitstable, we've been hearing from one of the team behind a new wine bar and restaurant. Keller is taking over the former home of Rulu's Deli. It's been set up by Dan Smith from the Fordwich Arms and his former colleague Elliot Ashton Connig. Elliot's been telling us more about the business.
Keller Wine Bar is going to be on Harbour Street in Whitstable, 28 Harbour Street. And it's a wine bar and restaurant, going to be opening in early June. From Daniel Smith and myself, a good friend of mine, so really, really looking forward to it. Using both of all of our experience from our time in hospitality, my experience as a sommelier from working in London and here, and doing stages abroad. And yeah, we're going to have a really, really accessible kind of food and wine offering, but just focusing on quality ingredients and provenance. I mean, I love Whitstable, I love visiting it. I've always had a real connection to it. My partner's from Whitstable, her family have lived in Whitstable for probably 30 years. I have always kind of just looked at it as a place where I could, you know, potentially one day open something. So yeah, want to be part of that community. I love the community there. I think everyone's really, really friendly, really nice, and there is a real togetherness about the community. Very much looking forward to being part of that.
They're hoping to keep prices down for customers and say it'll be a small, more relaxed venue.
Kent Online Sports.
Kent's Emma Raducanu has had a disappointing return to tennis after a two-month absence. She was beaten in straight sets by French player Diane Parry in the first round of the Strasbourg International. The British number one from Orpington recently missed several matches because of a post-viral illness. In football, former Gillingham goalkeeper Glenn Morris has joined a non-league club. The 42-year-old left the Gills at the start of the season and has now signed for Dorking Wanderers. He says he's excited for the opportunity. A teenager from Margate who's struggled with autism for his whole life has been selected to play pool for England. Ollie Mitchell was diagnosed at the age of 7 and says the sport has helped him overcome his social anxiety. The 19-year-old will represent his country at the 2026 World 8-Ball Pool Championship in Morocco. And a big screen is going to be set up in Margate this summer for the World Cup. England games will be shown at the Drill Shed, which is a 700 150 capacity venue at the Lido in Cliftonville. Outdoor venues like Folkestone Harbour Arm won't be broadcasting matches this time because of the late kickoffs. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. You can also get details on the top stories directed to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.